Who do you want fired?
We want to fire everyone who's making this organization not get to the playoffs.
They've shown they're not competent enough to bring a franchise of this caliber a ring. Okay. We got LeBron. We're not in the playoffs.
Lakers fans tend to have high expectations. So when their team picked NBA veteran Frank Vogel as their head coach, the LA faithful were underwhelmed by what seemed to be a lackluster choice. But so far this season, the Lakers' unflashy leader looks like the perfect man to lead the flashiest team in the NBA. Can he keep it up and keep LeBron James happy? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, January 22nd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Dell Small Business. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Mina.
So, Kevin, in spite of being blown out the other day in Boston, the Lakers are still the number one seed in the West, and everything is sunshine and rainbows around the Staples Center. But a year ago, it felt like there was a storm cloud hanging over the franchise. First, you had Magic Johnson, president of basketball operations, stepping down. The team fired their head coach, Luke Walton. And then they chose Frank Vogel as his replacement. And there was a perception around here in Los Angeles that it was a pretty uninspired choice.
Right. In some ways, Frank Vogel was the ultimate safety school for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Kevin Arnovitz is an NBA insider for ESPN.
They went after Monty Williams, former player who just has an immense amount of respect. But at the end of the day, he got a much more appealing offer from the Phoenix Suns. Ty Lue was a top choice. LeBron's former coach, NBA championship Cleveland Cavaliers in 2016. And what do the Lakers do? They offer him a contract that I think it's fair to say was maybe not befitting a championship coach. There's sort of a standard now for what an NBA coach gets in terms of years, in terms of money. And this particular contract offer fell far short of that, to the point where I think the public, and certainly the perception within the league, was here are the Lakers doing it again. They think they're the Lakers. They have this golden aura around them. They can just offer championship coaches deals that don't reflect that pedigree.
So they don't get Monty Williams. Ty Lue walks, not for another job. He just walks, and they get Vogel. I used to do a lot of LA sports radio, and I remember this announcement very vividly. Los Angeles Lakers fans, they were not happy. Kevin, in fact, they were furious.
Vogel, I think at the outset, was seen as an odd choice for a number of reasons. One is the Lakers are the Lakers, and they have traditionally gone after coaches that are either real brand names or have this royal Laker bloodline. They're part of the Laker family. So here comes Vogel, who is coming off two-year stint in Orlando where he lost twice as many games as he won. One could say no fault of his own. It was a young, mismatched roster of players. But he doesn't have a brand name. He looks like an accountant. You know, he's never played in the NBA before, so he doesn't bring with him the storied playing career. So for a fan base and a franchise that's always been very brand obsessed, why are you getting this off-brand coach? Was very much, I think, the perception.
An off-brand coach. Now I'm imagining Frank Vogel at the grocery store.
He's Kirkland.
Like the generic. I love Kirkland.
I
think
too.
That sets up this story very well because, you know, great value.
He's the Kirkland of coaches.
And of course, the Lakers are, you know, widely perceived as this hyper glamorous NBA franchise, in particular with LeBron James. They're going into an offseason in which they're going to be trying to get free agents. This is before the trade for Anthony Davis. And here comes maybe the least glamorous coach.
Forget fans for a second. Just people inside the game. 15 choices of who is going to be the next Lakers head coach. I don't know that Frank Vogel would have been on one ballot.
I'm not saying Vogel can't coach, right?
He can't coach LeBron.
Right, that's different.
So how did he get his start?
Frank Vogel got his start by being a pest. He was a Division III point guard for Juniata College, and he became obsessed with Kentucky basketball when he was at home on winter break one year watching that famous Duke-Kentucky game.
Early up the floor with Leitner. They throw it the length of the floor. Leitner catches, comes down, dribbles, shoots, scores! Buckner has hit the bucket at the buzzer. The Blue Devils win it.
He decides, I want to be part of big-time college basketball. He's going to leave his Division III school. He writes letters to the staff at Kentucky, including Rick Pitino, and they basically send back form letters. Thank you for your interest. This is in the mid-90s. So he decides, I'm just going to drop out of my college, enroll at Kentucky. I'm going to drive there basically without an invitation, and I'm just going to hang around the facility, do whatever, anything I can do to get inside, volunteer, whatever they need. And little by little, sure enough, he hangs around enough to the point where Jim O'Brien, who was an assistant to Rick Pitino, said, okay, you know, we'll we have the video room, which at the time, video rooms had become like the very sexy place to get your start as a coach now. Eric Spoelstra, Mike Budenholzer, Dave Fizdale. But back then, it was still kind of a newish thing. And so he just camped out in the video room and essentially became one of the best young video coordinators in all of basketball. And to the point when Pitino went to the Celtics, you know, they ultimately brought Frank Vogel along with them. And then when O'Brien took over, he promoted him again. And so little by little, he's sort of the, you know, he's the kind of the little engine that could of basketball.
Hmm. So he follows O'Brien to Indianapolis, and then that's where he gets his first shot as head coach. How does that go?
Right. He gets to the front, what we call the front of the bench. He comes a top assistant in Indiana under Jim O'Brien. O'Brien gets fired and, you know, Vogel's the next guy up. Larry Bird actually asked Jim O'Brien, look, this guy's really loyal to you. Do you think he'd take the job? And Jim O'Brien profanely said, absolutely. You know, let's get him on the phone right now. And you know, essentially said, hey, don't let Larry talk you out of this. I mean, this is your job and you should take it. And from there, Vogel started what was a very nice run in Indiana. The understanding is the toughest defense LeBron James has ever encountered in the postseason was the Frank Vogel Indiana Pacers defense. And I think it made a real impression on LeBron and really the rest of the league. Vogel made his bones there as a really good defensive coach.
What was his reputation like during these years as he was coming up in the NBA as a person?
I think his reputation was flawless insofar as he was regarded as one of the most personable people in the game. He's a guy who historically has not looked for credit. In some ways, he's a triumph of affability.
A triumph of affability is an incredible phrase. And not really the kind of, you know, usually in the NBA when you see phrases on t-shirts, it's, you know, crush or kill or dominate. A triumph of affability.
Yes, we're going to have sort of the Frank Vogel t-shirt with the face and the words triumph of affability.
I love that. So he's this nice guy. He's a great defensive mind. He's fairly successful in Indianapolis, a little bit less so in Orlando, partially due to circumstances beyond his control. Then he gets the Lakers job. What happens at the press conference where this is all announced?
In some ways, his introductory press conference could not have been a better introduction to Frank Vogel in the sense that he was an afterthought at his own press conference. Rob Pelinka, at the time the Lakers general manager, now president of basketball operations, takes the podium alongside Frank Vogel to introduce him. But Pelinka had not been in front of the media for months. That means since the media last got to speak to Pelinka on the record, we had that bizarre Magic Johnson hallway resignation that took everyone in the organization off guard.
So I've been thinking about the great meetings I had with Jeannie the last couple of days. You know, I love her as a sister. So today I'm going to step down as a president.
We had all the machinations with the Luke Walton firing. We had the rumors that were continuing to swirl about how the Lakers were going to approach the offseason and how they were going to dislodge Anthony Davis from the Pelicans. There's uncertainty around the roster, what's going to happen to Lonzo Ball and the kids. And so the media, naturally, after the opening statements, goes not to ask questions of Frank Vogel, largely, but turns all of their fire onto Rob Pelinka. And here's Vogel sitting, you know, hand on wrist, kind of this restful smile on his face, knowing, watching his new boss just get barraged with questions from the normally very mild-mannered Los Angeles press. And there's actually a funny moment where, you know, Vogel sort of interjects and says,
the perception of our organization is very far from the reality. There's a positive vibe happening with our team right now. There really is.
In some ways, it was a nice foreshadowing into what Vogel's been able to achieve this season. The press conference became much calmer and at peace after that moment.
So, Kevin, when Vogel was hired, I think another reason why people were skeptical was that he was perceived as maybe not having total control over his staff. And a lot of this was due to the fact that Jason Kidd came on as an assistant coach around the same time. So for those who don't know, Jason Kidd has sort of had this reputation around the league as kind of a Littlefinger character. For those who don't watch Game of Thrones, that means he is seen as biding his time, waiting to take out the king. You would probably not characterize his career as a triumph of affability.
So most NBA head coaches, when they take the job, are afforded the privilege of hiring their own staff. Vogel, while the Lakers would tell you absolutely, he certainly had a strong voice, they had a very distinct vision of what they wanted that staff to be. They wanted it to be experienced former head coaches who had the unimpeachable respect of veteran players. And Kidd, in their eyes, fit that image. And you can understand why. I mean, Jason Kidd is a Hall of Fame point guard. I have two sources that have told me that LeBron James regards Jason Kidd as the only person alive who sees the game of basketball with a level of clarity that he does.
Which, by the way, I feel like is part of the reason why people thought he might take out Frank Vogel's relationship with LeBron.
Yeah, and on top of that, right, so you have that factor. You have the fact that everyone kind of knows that this wasn't your selection. And on top of that, you have Kidd's history. There's been a lot of palace intrigue wherever he's been, whether it was in Brooklyn and then in Milwaukee, where actually he was hired outside the knowledge of the front office itself, directly by the owners. And I think there's a perception that, you know, there are always going to be power struggles where Kidd exists. He's an extremely competitive guy. Vogel knows all this. I had an NBA coach bet me a nickel over the summer that Jason Kidd would be the head coach by the end of the season. I might win that nickel now.
Coming up, how Frank Vogel's no-fear approach helped him win over the Lakers locker room. The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So Vogel gets the job. Jason Kidd also gets the job. What happens? How does Vogel handle his hiring?
His first meeting with Kidd is he kind of treats it like an interview. He wants Kidd to explain everything that happened in Brooklyn and Milwaukee. He wants a certain level of reassurance. In some ways, the way he's handled it became a foreshadowing of his performance in the job overall. He takes it in stride. He's reasonably assured by his conversation with Kidd. He reminds himself that, listen, I had Brian Shaw, an NBA champion who was head coach ready, you know, joined his staff in Indiana. After that, it was Nate McMillan, who'd been a successful head coach. So if Frank Vogel had coached in Indiana as if he was afraid of the guy in the next chair, he would have failed. And I think this in some ways encapsulates Vogel's approach to the whole job, which is, I'm going to coach the way I want to coach. I cannot worry about potential disloyalty. By virtue of not coaching scared, that was very much, I think, part one of the essential ingredients to why Vogel has succeeded.
The summer kicks in, free agency happens, they get Anthony Davis. It sort of feels like the spotlight kind of moves off of Vogel. He's quietly running the team, instilling the culture he wants. Then the season begins. When did it become clear to you that he was sort of winning over the squad?
There was a key game early in the season at Dallas. The Lakers trailed by three. It was classic short clock situation. You need a three to tie. And they run the old San Antonio Spurs hammer play, which we'd seen Manu Ginobili do a million times, where in LeBron James playing the role of Manu Ginobili, obviously cuts a very different image, but he's a left-handed dribbler who knows how to penetrate and with great finesse, fine open players. And that's exactly what happens. Green runs across this baseline screen as he did in San Antonio a million times. LeBron finds him in the corner. It's a three.
Here is Bradley. James. James going to the rim, kicks to the corner. Green a three to tie. He got it! We have overtime!
That is one moment that number of both player and staff for the Lakers said, hey, Frank showed us something there. And I think over time, that combined with holding everyone accountable, and this has got to be the scariest thing if you're Vogel in some respects, right? He, from the outset, he held, you know, LeBron James and Anthony Davis accountable, says every single player I've spoken to on that roster, and rode them every bit as hard as the supporting players. And I think that combined with a little levity, he's been known to, in the middle of a film session, splice in a Saturday Night Live skit or some other comedy bit from YouTube. I think just that combination of attributes. And look, the winning helps, Mina. The winning helps.
Let's talk about the LeBron thing, because you mentioned accountability, and this is always the question that follows LeBron. How do you coach him? How do you coach one of the greatest players in the history of basketball? How hard do you push? You know, should you not push? Is it a bad look if you don't push? Is he perceived as walking all over you? Are you actually coaching the team? These are the questions we ask about LeBron James and his coaches. How do you think their relationship has borne out so far?
It seems to have been borne out very well. Part of that is LeBron's older now. And in some ways, I think deference for LeBron has gotten a little easier. And the good news for LeBron is, as much as there's deference, there's collaboration. The Lakers had 2 days off before their Christmas Day game after a bad loss against Denver. How you're going to distribute that time, if you're Frank Vogel, you can do a number of ways. Does the, you know, do players want to be with their families on Christmas Eve since they're playing Christmas Day? Do they want to kind of get their work in early? Would they rather have the 23rd off after a bad loss? Now, a coach is entirely in his power to just call the shot there. But Vogel has made it a habit of going to his two superstars, to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and said, look, I can do this any number of ways. You know, there's no ego for Vogel. He just says, how do you want to do this? Turns out they took the very unusual measure of coming in at 8 a.m. on Christmas Eve. Then they got to get out of the facility by 10 a.m. and getting to spend Christmas Eve with their families. And look, it's a small thing, but I think in the aggregate, Vogel knows he doesn't have to make every battle an edict. Why not include your superstars in those decisions?
There are two minds when it comes to the job of coaching LeBron James. Some people think it's the easiest job in basketball. You know, again, the memes and the jokes about how LeBron was always actually coaching the team in Cleveland. And then some people think it's the hardest job in basketball. Which do you think is closer to the truth?
I think it's both, although I will lean on it's easier than harder. Managing the highest profile athlete in the world isn't easy. I think it's nice to have the talent and the fact that LeBron does see the game the way he is a coach on the floor. I would say that the elasticity of outcome is much greater. Like, if it goes bad, it goes really bad.
So everything is fine and dandy now. As you mentioned, everything looks good when you're winning. But the expectations for this team are pretty much championship or bust. You know, in the past, LeBron's coaches have been evaluated based on how they performed in the playoffs. If he is on your team, you are expected to win it all.
Oh, I think the pressure cooker will heat up in April. The success in many ways is raising expectations by the day. If you finish as the one seed in the West, if you win the conference by 3, 4, or 5 games, if you have those two guys, you're expected to win a championship. I don't care how good the Milwaukee Bucks run is. How can you lose to a team that's never been there before? There really is no outcome that is satisfying other than confetti.
I feel like the subtext to your entire story here is that you should just settle for the nice guy who was there all along.
I think the lesson for me is the Lakers sort of counterintuitively landed in a really good situation. I think the Lakers learned something, or they should have learned something, which is for all the brand obsession and for all the we're the Laker family and we need, you know, A-list stars on our marquee, you go with the guy who doesn't bring any of that, and guess what? It's working. You don't always need to chase history or chase legacy or make the splashy hire. You know, sometimes the prosaic is actually brilliant.
Kirkland snacks taste just as good.
The Kirkland of NBA coaches, Frank Vogel.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks.
Coming up, in praise of Felix Hernandez, whose reign as King of Seattle will never be forgotten. Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast. Here's another story I want you to know. Earlier this week, it was reported that longtime Mariners pitcher Felix Hernandez signed a minor league deal with the Atlanta Braves. If Hernandez makes the 40-man roster, it's a $1 million one-year contract, which is no sure thing, given that the 34-year-old pitcher is coming off of his worst season. But for the Braves, it's a low-risk move. And for me, it's an opportunity to ruminate on the career of one of my favorite athletes to ever play the game. So Mariners fans, like myself, don't have a lot to hang our perpetually unsuccessful rally caps on. We've never won a World Series. We haven't even been to the postseason in nearly 20 years, which is the longest drought in baseball, basketball, football, you name it. But for years, through good seasons, bad ones, promising ones, Scooby-Doo ones, those are the ones I pretend never happened, we had Felix. He was first spotted by a Seattle scout when he was pitching in Venezuela as a young teen, and he was called up when he was 19 years old. From there, he went on to pitch in Seattle for the next 14 years, and he was incredible. From 2006 through 2015, he put up an ERA of 3 and averaged 210 strikeouts per season. He changed the way we talk about baseball because he played for so many mediocre teams. We stopped leaning on wins as a pitching metric, and he won the Cy Young despite going 13-12. He also pitched a perfect game. But most importantly of all, at least to Seattle fans, he stayed. Despite never having pitched in October, and despite rumors about him leaving for greener pastures and bigger markets, he stayed. He signed a 7-year deal in Seattle in 2013. After Felix's last start with the Mariners, my friend Meg Rowley, who is the managing editor of Fangraphs.com and, like myself, is a perpetually disappointed Mariners fan, published a piece that I thought about today. She wrote, "He is gone, but the memory of him, perfect, resplendent, royal, wrecked, but importantly ours, will persist." I hope Felix makes a comeback in Atlanta, but to Seattle fans, he will always be ours. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.